Each night this week, KPLU comes to you with special coverage of the World Trade Organization meeting in Seattle. Here's our Friday night and final edition of The World Comes to Seattle with your host, KPLU business and labor reporter, Steve Krueger.
Good evening. The World Trade Organization's third ministerial conference is nearing an end, and many in Seattle won't be sorry to see it and the unrest it spawned go. In less than an hour, the closing declaration is scheduled to be released. A draft of that report shows that American agriculture won and American labor lost. In this expanded special report, we'll examine who shaped that declaration and who didn't. We'll take a look at the final protest march of WTO week and how the alternative media covered the World Trade Organization. That and more on KPLU's special report, The World Comes to Seattle. The closing declaration of a WTO meeting is actually more of an agenda than a statement. A draft of that declaration was prepared earlier today and circulated among delegates, some of whom have given copies to reporters. It spells out the goals of trade talks that'll take place during the next 3 to 4 years. Agriculture was the big issue for the United States. American negotiators wanted an end to farm subsidies and to open borders for farm exports. The draft declaration agrees and commits the 134 member states of the WTO to pursue that objective. While American farmers won, organized labor lost. Nowhere in the draft is there any mention of negotiating labor standards as part of trade agreements. That was especially bitter news here in Seattle, where labor unions Tuesday put upwards of 25,000 people onto the streets. They wanted the WTO to require that nations consider the labor standards employed by exporting countries as part of any new trade deal. Ron Judd of the King County Labor Council was one of the organizers of this week's Big Labor March.
I'm disappointed that the trade ministers would not recognize that. We knew this was going to be a long fight. We were hoping that Seattle would change the discussion taking place within those halls. We think that we've accomplished that and that the international debate that takes place after Seattle will be much different.
The inclusion of labor standards was bitterly opposed by developing countries. They saw the prospect as a potential way for importing countries to keep their products out. And some even described the idea as a form of cultural imperialism because child labor, for example, is an integral part of the cultural life of many rural families, where youngsters work in the fields to help the family produce their crop. This is only a draft declaration. It is expected, however, that most of the key points will be part of the final statement, which is slated for release at 6:30. The World Trade Organization bills itself as a democratic body where decisions are reached by consensus. But delegates from lesser developed nations are saying they're being shut out of the process. More from KPLU's Donna Winch.
The message from non-industrialized nation delegates is remarkably consistent. They say decisions about setting the WTO's agenda were made by industrialized nations behind closed doors. Sridath Rampal is the chief negotiator for the Caribbean countries.
We're holding it in the United States, which is supposed to be very democratic. And yet nothing is democratic about what is happening here, because there is the sham of a general discussion, but the real discussions are taking place between a few countries in what are described as green rooms.
So who's meeting in the green rooms?
United States, Canada, Europe, Japan. We thought we had seen the end of it in Geneva, but it has surfaced here as the dominant element.
Rampal says while industrialized nations were setting an agenda that lesser developed nations were expected to endorse, the poorer countries were meeting among themselves. For example, he says last night African delegates issued a warning that they can't be expected to join in a consensus when they haven't been allowed to participate in the process.
Okay, my name is Albert Shabang. I'm Minister of Foreign Affairs and Trade from the Kingdom of Swaziland.
Have you been in a green room session yet? Has your country been in one of these consultations yet?
Not yet. Not yet.
So you've been here since Tuesday and your country has not been behind the closed doors yet?
No.
A representative of the U.S. State Department, Whitney Schneidman, says America is trying to make sure representatives of lesser developed countries feel a part of the trade talks.
You know, I don't think anybody's really satisfied until they're right at that key table. You can't get 135 countries around one small table, but you can get the key issues there. And I think that's what we're trying to do.
Schneidman says the growth in the number of countries involved in the WTO is making it difficult to include everyone. But he says it's an effort the WTO needs to make. Donna Winch, KPLU News.
This week's WTO protests have dominated headlines in Seattle and around the world. The demonstrations and violent outbreaks have also been the topic of discussion among hundreds of the foreign delegates who are taking in these images and taking them back to their native countries. KPLU's Jennifer Neeson reports.
Many of the delegates were surprised by the sheer number of protesters, but say the parades and violent outbursts did not prevent them from getting down to business. Wes Schultz is with the U.S. delegation.
All that really happened is it got us off to a slow start the first day, but after that, the work continued.
A number of conference participants, like this observer from Croatia, say they respect the rights of protesters, but also point out foreign delegations have a right to discuss trade under the umbrella of the WTO.
I have right to air my thoughts and to discuss that with my colleagues who have paid tens of thousands of dollars to fly to Seattle and to discuss something of mutual concern.
Those who participated in this conference worked 14-hour days and say the only part of Seattle they saw was between their hotel and the convention center. And the delegates who did get a chance to go out and mingle with locals say they're not leaving the Northwest with a bad image of the Emerald City.
Is that the people of Seattle have shown themselves to be extraordinarily friendly. Delegates have been very genuinely impressed.
Jennifer Neeson, KPLU News.
Downtown Seattle looks a little like a debutante that's fallen on hard times this week. The holiday glitter is largely hidden behind plywood, a legacy of the steps that store owners had to take this week to protect their property from the handful of vandals who rampaged through city streets, while tens of thousands of others engaged in orderly protest activity or acts of civil disobedience against the World Trade Organization. The wraps have begun to come off. The process continues this weekend as the city goes all out to bring its people back to town. There's free parking all over downtown this weekend. Metro, Community Transit, and Sound Transit are offering free rides into downtown Seattle. There'll be music, jingle bell giveaways, and volunteers collecting food, blankets, and warm clothing for the homeless. Merchants are promising all sorts of free food and treats. They say it's time to bring back what they call the real Seattle. In the end, neither labor nor environmental protesters got what they wanted from the World Trade Organization. Still, they are generally upbeat about what they and other demonstrators accomplished in Seattle. KPLU's Paula Whistle has the story.
Earlier today through Seattle grew thousands. A police escort led the way as protesters chanted their way through the city's no-protest zone. There were old-time union organizers and 20-something environmentalists, people with the Direct Action Network, as well as pastors from various congregations.
Well, there's sort of the cross-pollination of all the different constituencies and communities over this past week is the animating sort of theme and spirit of this last march of the week.
Speakers shouting from a makeshift stage said the fact that such varied factions can come together is significant.
We got a movement here. What I'd like to see us commit to, because this is just the beginning.
King County Councilman Larry Gossett made comparisons to the civil rights movement. Union leaders say when they decided to take on the WTO, they knew it would be a long, hard struggle. At a big rally earlier this week, Teamsters President Jim Hoffa put it this way.
Maybe we won't win today. But we're going to win tomorrow.
Meanwhile, Carl Pope, head of the Sierra Club, said the protests here are the start of a powerful populist coalition, a coalition that began 6 years ago when labor and environmentalists joined forces to try and fight the North American Free Trade Agreement. Paula Whistle, KPLU News.
When you're attempting to bring breaking news as quickly as you can, sometimes technical difficulties get in the way and realities of the clock can't be ignored. We apologize for those problems. On Sunday, the tent cities that went up last weekend to give homeless people a place to stay during the WTO will come down. Homeless advocates had feared for the safety of the people who live on downtown streets. Subsequent events certainly proved their fears to be well-founded. Crown Hill Methodist Church and Seattle Advent Christian Church allowed the tent cities to be set up in their parking lots for the week. Homeless advocates say that act of mercy may have saved some lives. You're listening to The World Comes to Seattle on KPLU. Tacoma, Seattle. Tens of thousands of people have been on the streets of Seattle this week, of course, protesting against the World Trade Organization. A year ago, many likely had never even heard of the WTO. I talked with John Gastel, a professor of speech communications at the University of Washington. He says he thinks many of the protesters were driven by issues that went far deeper than simple concerns over the environment or agriculture.
A broader theme that does seem to underlie the strength of the emotion for a lot of people is that they don't have any conception of what their role is within the body, the WTO. That is, when they're dealing with a mayor or a member of Congress, they know that they can vote on Election Day, that they can directly contact the representative. There's a name and a title that they know they can contact. And they can usually attend some kind of a town meeting or public forum. With the WTO, that's really difficult to do. Who do you vote for? Well, do you vote for the president who appoints someone and sends someone? That's so indirect that that doesn't really mesh with the American conception of the relationship between a citizen and a representative.
Is it your perception that there has been inadequate explanation in the media, particularly, of just how the WTO functions to allow people to understand this is, in fact, how you can influence them to some degree or not?
Well, I think the media has actually done a pretty good job of trying to explain what it is, but I've noticed a little bit of confusion among people in the media because it isn't a conventional governing body. That is, think of it this way. The WTO doesn't have the same kind of direct power over us that, say, our federal government does. It can't just change the tax rate and immediately change our lives. But it has a tremendous influence, as do all of these international trade agreements, and that's where they have really any degree of control over individual member nations. I think for the average citizen, it's hard to understand how you can influence that body if it's not really directly connected to your government.
John Gastel is a professor of speech communications at the University of Washington. It looks like the next round of trade talks may include a panel on genetically altered plants and animals. The issue raises such passions that a press conference today turned into a shouting match. It was organized by five non-governmental groups, but several opposing lobbyists crashed the meeting. KPLU's Bellamy Palethorpe reports.
Vicky Korpus of the Third World Network says the WTO should not be the body to regulate the flow of genetically altered organisms such as seeds. Korpus of the Philippines says the WTO makes decisions based on trade and it's not equipped to handle ecology.
We know that genetically modified organisms, these are living organisms, and if you bring them into a country, they will cross-pollinate with other plants and therefore they will destroy, you know, the diversity that is existing there.
But there's debate about whether that phenomenon known as genetic drift is actually a serious threat. A man accredited as a journalist repeatedly interrupts Korpus. He says genetically modified organisms are actually good for the environment because they can improve farmers' yields, reduce poverty, and free up more land for wildlife.
You know, who do you actually represent? I represent the indigenous people. Who are you?
A drawn-out argument ensues with lobbyists from various groups chiming in. Barun Mitra from the Liberty Institute in New Delhi says hundreds of thousands of Indian farmers are lining up for genetically altered seed.
I think this is a gross violation of the rights of the people in the poorer countries if we say that they don't need to increase food and have a choice regarding what thing to grow and how to grow it.
If the WTO does form a working group on biotechnology, it's not clear whose interests it would represent. But the U.S. and Canada, leaders in the development and patenting of these organisms, are the key backers of the proposal. Bellamy Palethorpe, KPLU News.
You've been hearing news of the World Trade Organization from your television, the newspaper, and from radio stations like this one. But have you logged on? Independent videographers and journalists are turning to the internet to tell their view of what's been happening in Seattle this week. KPLU's Christine Arrowsmith has more.
This storefront in downtown Seattle is the headquarters for an internet site called IndieMedia.org that's devoted to WTO coverage. Sitting amidst a bay of computers, a producer who goes by Digital Dub is helping a colleague get an interview posted on the website.
I do this on my machine because my real audio works well.
Digital Dub says Indie Media is providing a viewpoint of WTO events not heard in other media.
People can post their own information, and it's really different than the mainstream. mainstream media, where there's editors controlling what everybody says. Here we're trusting people that were out in the field and saw what they saw.
The Indy Media webpage has opinions about the WTO emailed by people in far-off Calcutta and Rio de Janeiro, and thoughtful speeches given this week in Seattle that have taken a back seat to street demonstrations, such as how women in Chiapas are affected by world markets. The site also posts video shot by protesters of police response. Producer Jim Madison says cell phones, cheap video cameras, and the internet are valuable tools to political protesters and independent producers.
They've drastically changed the so-called battlefield, if you will, or the chessboard. The people can actually communicate and find out what's really going on at the front line.
Another producer, Jeff Perlstein, says the internet solves the tough problem of distribution for independent producers, but says that alone will not allow more people to be heard.
In the 30s, everyone was looking at radio as this new technology that was going to democratize the world, you know, and then TV was this new technology that was going to democratize the world. Now the internet is supposed to democratize the world. So what we really need to be doing is democratizing our relationships with each other.
The site's on the web at indymedia.org. Christine Arrowsmith, KPLU News.
Seattle's William Ruckelshaus is a former Nixon cabinet secretary, the first head of the Environmental Protection Agency, and the man who negotiated the most recent salmon deal with Canada. He's got the ear of President Clinton, and he was invited to visit the president during his stay in Seattle this week. But a funny thing happened to Ruckelshaus on his way to the Westin Hotel, as he explained during a WTO environmental workshop.
I'd like to give you my own views on what happened at the meeting with the president yesterday, except on the way to the meeting I was gassed. I was stopped on the way to the hotel. I was on foot by a police officer who said that the access to the hotel was closed off. And he said, I said, well, I have an appointment there. He said, who do you have an appointment with? And I said, the President of the United States. He said, sure you do.
This wraps up KPLU's special coverage of the World Trade Organization's third ministerial conference. A lot of people have worked together to bring it to you, and it's time to thank them for their passion, their energy, and their commitment. Without the early and unwavering support of Program Director Joey Cohn, none of this would have been possible. News Director Erin Hennessy made certain that every story we put on the air met her exacting standards of fairness, balance, and clarity. Environment reporter and Seattle Bureau Chief Keith Seinfeld's cool head and outstanding production talent made it possible for our reporters to sometimes be in two places at once. And our reporters, the absolute backbone of any news operation. They were tear-gassed, pepper-sprayed, and rain-soaked through the week. They wore out a lot of shoe leather, covering the civil disturbances and the real issues that the WTO brought to town. They were Paula Whistle, Bellamy Palethorpe, Leah Moriarty, Donna Winch, Jennifer Nielsen, Robert Tynes, Dan Treidel, Michelle Garcia, and Charlie McAteer. Our health reporter, Christine Arrowsmith, ironically, wasn't healthy enough to cover the WTO most of the week. But no mere case of the flu could keep her away. She engineered this program flawlessly and assembled the nightly sound montages that so beautifully captured the incredible audio images of this week. Behind the scenes, Operations Director Kerry Swanson, Chief Engineer Lowell Kiso, and Information Services Manager Jeff Bauman made certain we had all of the equipment we needed to put this special report on the air every night. Music Director Nick Morrison found just the right theme music for the program and the on-air promos assembled by Dick Stein. This was a team effort, the biggest single news coverage operation ever attempted by KPLU. We hope you've enjoyed what you've heard. Next, the sound montage. For all of us, I'm Steve Kruger, KPLU News.
I mean, no, there was nobody violent, but people were running to get away from the gas.
Today we say with one clear voice, abusive child labor is wrong and must end.
What I worry about is this, is that in the coming years, all farmers will be in the shape of the black farmer. And believe me, that is not the best position to be in this world.
People should stop giving the business community such a bum rap.
There is nothing that we can do to the WTO to make it good.
Before I close, I also want to thank Seattle and the people of Seattle who have shown such grace under pressure.
We are a city that holds the right to free speech in a very high regard. If you work with the police, they will work with you.
We have not been, as a group, the African group, we have not been very happy with the way the consultations have been going.
Actually armed themselves and used the following. Large sticks, their gas masks, smoke grenades, super soaker squirt guns, paint, slingshots, Molotov cocktails.
Marketplace is next on KPLU 88.5 NPR. It's 6:09.